Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Stress-Free JD podcast. This is a podcast about learning to thrive rather than just survive in the legal profession. It's perfect for attorneys, law students, and really anyone living a high-stress life can benefit from the knowledge and stories shared on the podcast. If you are new here, I'm Amanda Bynum. I'm an attorney and an educator. A few years ago, I was a burnt-out public defender suffering from mental health and substance abuse issues. I've gradually been making small changes towards living a more healthy lifestyle and have immersed myself in all things wellness. At the same time, I learned more about the pervasiveness of mental health and substance abuse issues in the profession. I started seeing positive changes in my own life and talking about it. Other attorneys were grateful that I was talking about wellness, mental health, and substance abuse. Every time I did, I got such positive feedback that I decided to start the Stress-Free JD podcast to share what I'm learning, to share my story, and to provide a platform for others to share theirs. I'm trying to do my part to help bring awareness to the issues and end the stigma around talking about the impact of stress on attorneys. I am always interested in talking with other attorneys about wellness and self-care, so let me know if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast. My email is stressfreejd@gmail.com. If you like the show, please leave feedback, leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts, and share with your friends on social media or through email. On this episode of the Stress-Free JD podcast, I talk with Olivia Ash, a law graduate from Indiana who currently works advising employers on contracts and wellness program management. On the side, she runs Live Balanced LLC. In our interview, we talk about Olivia's research on lawyer and law student wellness, how she has overcome adversity, including a divorce during law school, chronic illness, and a bar exam failure by staying positive and maintaining healthy hobbies and habits. You can find her at www.livbalanced.net. Without further ado, here's our interview. Why don't you just like introduce yourself and tell me what your current role and job is?
Officially, my name is Olivia Ash, and I am, as I have been called by other individuals, a Renaissance woman. When they ask me what I do and how I do it or why I do so many things, I can honestly say, and not that I wouldn't be honest, but transparently say that I'm an individual who craves knowledge, and I like to be busy. And that is, I said this before on another podcast, and I think that's the best way to approach understanding what I do and why I do. I have so much energy and it is innate. I asked my mother about this. I said, Mom, what was I like as a kid? And she said, you never stopped, like never. So it's interesting how that ties in with my wellness and my performance in my role as an educator or in a consultant in law, because I have to be careful with how much caffeine that I consume because it will affect me very intensely.
Me too. Yes. I've been trying to lay off like the Bang energy drinks, which is what I was on for a little while. So,
I mean, I will have one cup of coffee, and today I had two because it's rainy and I'm tired and I'm getting ready for some stuff. But so That's me as a person, and just kind of what drives me is I really want to know things. I'm incredibly sensitive. So empathy, I did those strength assessment tests. So I want to know things. I'm pretty empathetic, which is kind of challenging sometimes when you're in law. But I'm pretty responsible, and I just like to just keep going, just keep trying. So that's me. But now my professional aspect, I am currently serving as a compliance consultant for a software company, and we do a compliance software. So my role within that is not as the attorney doing the legal stuff in the background. They hired me specifically for my experience in education and teaching. I am basically sort of the person who goes around the country, goes to conferences, and I speak about compliance, and I speak about our company's way of compliance and what our software does, but how we can be the differentiator. So I have a little account management role, a little sales role, a little public speaking role. And that's good because that's what I did for 10 years. I was in wellness account management and I implemented wellness programs. So that's my full-time job.
Yeah. So you said you were in wellness for 10 years, and that was before going to law school?
That, yes.
Mm-hmm. So what led you to the law and to go to law school in the first place?
So I went, there's a myriad factors. I was at the role that I had grown into at the wellness company that I worked for. I went from managing client accounts to supervising account managers to the business development portion, which was a lot of contracting. And what I realized is there needed to be some organization happening for that particular situation, but I liked the problem solving aspect of it. And in my personal life, there were some things. So I was like, okay, I need to, you know, add another tool to my tool belt. I want to be able to get these skill sets and have a solid career, take care of my family, take care of myself. I like to learn. I like the problem solving. You know, it's only going to help. It's only going to help. That's kind of how I looked at it.
So. Yeah. So you're doing this compliance work. Do you also do wellness consulting still of some sort?
So I do not do wellness consulting in an employer space. And I actually don't do consulting at the present moment. It doesn't look like that. And it's not looking like that right now. So, however, I was a personal trainer right out of undergrad and in fitness. And then I went back to grad school a year later and got my master's in physiology and education of health. So then I got my teaching license and I teach wellness lifestyle principles right now as a very part-time job because I love teaching and I want to keep fresh on it. So it's not an official consulting role, but again, since I'm doing so many things, one of my creative outlets and an outlet for an idea down the line, and I'm working through it, is I created my own company, Live Balanced, and the website is live. We're tweaking some stuff tonight, but it's really going to be kind of a place to put all of that experience I have together to disseminate the information. And a lot of it is on living a healthy lifestyle and just taking a fresh look at life and just being, yeah, you can be in law and you can do this and you still have this thread of practicing healthy behaviors and giving yourself a little grace about it.
When you were in law school, then did you observe the sort of, I guess, the problem that exists in the profession with regard to like not being well?
Absolutely. And that is one of the things that I am thankful for having gone back to school at the age of 35. I started law school at 35. I just turned 35. So I came in with a perspective that was different than many of my colleagues who came straight from undergrad, 21, 22. But not just that, it was the amount of mental angst that my colleagues were dealing with. And then what I would see is the concern of failing every single day. I could see the detriments to their physical body. And so that is one of the reasons for my research, which we can talk about later, but absolutely. I would see just lack of exercise or the fatigue, or after, you know, I went to law school part-time in the evenings, so I was there 4 years instead of three. And I saw some of my colleagues, I knew when they were exhausted, they would gain weight. Many of them gained weight and complained about it. And they knew that I was a wellness professional. So we would talk about that stuff and they would be like, why are you eating an apple? Or don't you need more energy? Or you move around a lot. And I'm like, guys, we sit for 4 hours. Yeah. I'm going up and down these stairs at every break.
So did your foundation in wellness and your healthy lifestyle habits, did they help you in law school to not fall into those traps?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for everyone, it's, and having consulted individuals on wellness personally as a trainer and then business-wise, it is a decision that has to be made inside when you are ready for it. And everybody has to get to that threshold. But absolutely, because I had lived life a little more and I had had the training and it was easier for me to be like, I got to change this. And I could start to see things happen with me and just be like, I got to have sleep. I can't have too much caffeine, you know, only alcohol in certain times. So it did help a little bit, I think.
So what types of things do you do to balance other than what you just talked about, like sleep and other things? Like what are your main like wellness habits?
My main wellness habits are exercise. That's my sort of platform. That's obviously my training educationally, but movement and breathing is huge for interrupting that stress cycle. So whether that's getting steps at the office, whether that's taking a walk around the office during the day, I cycle, I practice yoga. I just have to get out and move and then be in nature to get my perspective.
Yeah.
That's my main way to manage stress. Everybody's different, so you got to find what works for you. But besides that, it's probably choosing the types of foods that don't cause me pain. So I deal with irritable bowel. I have an inflammatory condition, and I was like, I'm going to have to give up these foods, but I'm okay with that because I'm at a point where I want to function. I want to be successful. And, you know, this particular food is going to cause pain, so it's not worth it. So I think of food as fuel to continue going instead of an emotional place to be happy.
Yeah. I'm always trying to remind myself that, you know, this is supposed to help your machine run faster, run better, more efficiently.
Yeah. And that's something I try to teach my students. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. And I know you teach, do you teach undergrad students?
I do. I teach undergrad students. Yes. I've taught adult learners, but right now I teach undergrads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's so important at the undergrad level because so many students don't come to law school with the coping mechanisms and the self-care habits that they need to succeed. I'm interested in the research that you did. Mm-hmm. So I know you did research on loneliness, and I'm interested in, number one, what made you interested in that topic? And then if you want to just talk about your research.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was interested in the topic because in 2018, so at the end of my third year, I saw an article in Harvard Business Review. It was a one-liner that lawyers rated the loneliest of American workers. And I was like, that's a problem. I remember going down the steps at the law school, you know, it's the evening. And I'm sure that it was an amalgamation of talking to my classmates and going through my own experiences and knowing I had to write a thesis as part of my requirements to graduate that next year. So that was really the spark, so much, you know, that lit the fire. It's like, why are lawyers the loneliest? That's a problem. And it made me hurt for them because I was doing that law school, seeing how much energy my friends were putting in and how stressed they were, knowing that unless some things change, it's not going to get easier when you're out there and you got a deadline.
Oh yeah.
You got 15 deadlines. So I wanted to learn more about that. And I wanted to be able to write a thesis and stay interested, number one, but also, and to use my other backgrounds because of my unique position being an older adult in the school. So I was like, okay, I can do research because I know how to do research and I'm a wellness professional. And so that's kind of how it started. As far as it's grown quite a bit, and I have become very invested because I spent a year researching. So typically we had a semester, and what typically happens is this is a checkbox for the requirements for the school. You got to have a thesis and you got to write maybe 30 pages. And typical for me, it ended up becoming a much larger.
I think it's 83 pages, right?
Okay. 83. So what happened is I met with my supervising professor, Professor Allison Martin, and she is great. And she did a great job of keeping me on track because, of course, you know, I'm still working full time. I had just gone through a divorce in the middle of law school. I was dealing
with... Not stressful at all, I'm sure.
No, not stressful, no. Yeah. Getting a new home and dealing with this and da-da-da and all that. But she did a great job. But she's like, look, this is kind of a big deal. It's a big deal in the general population. I think we can make it more. And I actually wanted to conduct research. So I got the approval from Indiana University, the review board. I was already an adjunct faculty, so I had that to my advantage. So I created the survey and I created the email, and it all had to be approved. And I ended up enjoying doing that because I was able to ask my fellow colleagues how they were feeling and get some statistics. I did not have a huge response rate, but I didn't have an incentive either. And, you know, there's, you can go through the research, and I talk about that in the paper, of all that statistical information about, you know, well, maybe it's just the lonely ones who responded, or maybe it's skewed just for these individuals because women tend to respond more than men. But the point is I was an active student in class with my fellow students, and I still had about 6% of those reply. And I had people come up to me and say, thank you for asking.
Yeah. You know?
So it's just, so basically, in summary, as far as the outcome of that particular thesis, I conducted the research, and it paralleled the research I did in the general population, is that lawyers and law students, I should say, are lonely, and they're highly lonely. They are most lonely when they're in first year, and it tapers a little bit, but if you're a fourth or fifth year law student, don't beat yourself up if you're struggling with feelings of loneliness, because it's not uncommon. I was not surprised by it, because I had had dialogue with my friends, and the whole practice of, you know, we're law students, but the practice of law itself is isolating on several different levels. And that's the challenge, is how do we, and this is something I talked about with my professors, law school itself may be one of the main reasons for having such an unhealthy profession, is the expectations and the way that law school trains you for the profession and the expectations.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you probably have some thoughts on that too, because
I do.
I know that you're in the school there. It does feel like an uphill battle sometimes.
Yeah.
But at least I know I was able to contribute some valid, reliable, retestable research as a start, because nobody else has talked about it.
Yeah, and I think that this type of work is really important and timely, and I think there's a lot of work being done that could potentially change legal education to make it less toxic, I guess.
Yeah, toxic is a great way to put it. And is it toxic because of the, it's not because the professors, it's not the professors, and it's not the content, it's the environment, I believe, but it's also, you have to understand the individuals that come into law school, the typical types of characteristics that we see. So from the research, these lonely people, if you're lonely already, and then law school can make you feel lonelier. And just for the record, loneliness is that discrepancy between relationships, how you want them to be, and what you think that, and what they are. So you may have several friends, but you still feel lonely because it's not what you and your perception feel that you need, and where you want it to be, which sounds kind of common being in law. It's not what I want it to be. I could do better. I want this case to go this way, or I should have written it this way, or what do they think of me? And so what we tend to see is that hypervigilance, individuals, type A personalities, lonely people tend to exhibit shyness, anxiety, hostility towards themselves mentally, social awkwardness, and lower self-esteem in general, for general population, those people who rate high. So then you voluntarily put yourself into one of the most difficult professions, and it can just rack that self-esteem and self-efficacy.
Yeah. Did your research say anything about what the implications of loneliness and the isolation are on attorney competence?
That's a great question. I did not address that in specifically or spend a lot of time with that, because I was focusing on what loneliness was in law students to the extent that I could, and saying that there needs to be more. But if we think about it, the professional rules, you know, the professional rules don't say, hey, lawyer, take care of yourself so that you can be a zealous advocate for someone else.
Because
I'm always like, zealously advocate for yourself first so that you can then give to someone else. Be your own zealous advocate, but there's nothing in there that says, you know, you have to take care of your health. You just have to, it's these, you can't do this. You shouldn't do this. You haven't done this, instead of ensure that you take care of this, or we're going to provide you pathways for mental health counseling, mm-hmm. and it's going to be funded, and it's going to be okay if something happens. So, there's honestly not a lot of research out there about that. It's just now beginning to gain momentum with the lawyer, as you had mentioned, the ABA's task force.
Yeah.
And Patrick Krill just got approved for something in California. I didn't read all the details, but I saw the headline. And then there is a lawyer well-being week, the first one coming up in May, which I have a video contributed to that and hopefully get to do some more. So I'm excited about
that. Cool. We talked a lot about sort of your career journey. I'm wondering if your interest in well-being may have sprung from any sort of struggles that you may have had in your own life with work-life balance or well-being.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. To say short answer, yes. One thing I find interesting is if you are making efforts to practice a healthy lifestyle, and at least for me in my personal experience, I remember very specifically someone being like, "You're eating a brownie." And I was like, "Yes, I'm eating a brownie. I eat brownies. I drink tequila. I have good days. I have bad days." But it's like anything else. There's expectations. If you're in wellness, that you live a perfect life. But that's not what it is. I fully believe, and that's why I started Live Balanced, is it really is about making an effort to maintain balance so that you can enjoy what you want, but not restrict yourself too much. Life is full of the ups and the downs and the rainy days and the hot days. And if you decide to have a cookie or whatever, it should not, and I say this to myself from a self-esteem perspective, not make you feel fat, ugly, or unattractive. From a health perspective, I'll be 40 this summer, and I feel the youngest and healthiest, and I'm in my smallest size clothing and more fit than I have been in my entire life. And I play Division I sports. So I'm that way because I have put the effort in and I'm treating my chassis better. And then my outlook. So I am seeking counseling. I went through a divorce. I mean, I went through law school. I took the bar and I failed it by a few points and I had to take it again. All of those things affect my mental health. And so I'm trying to practice what I preach, but I also have a genetic condition that is degenerative. I'm having cranial surgery at the end of March.
Looking at your Instagram.
It'll be my 13th orthopedic surgery in 15 years.
You have to have a positive mindset to get through all of that.
I find that positive is a better alternative than negative because by nature, I'm a pretty positive, optimistic person, but I've had my years of being negative and I understand why. You ask about a certain wellness perspective. I was in a position, I remember my 30th birthday, I was so unhappy. I was unhappy because I was not standing up for myself in an unhealthy relationship. I was in a lot of pain. I was dealing with surgeries. I felt like I needed to be creative because I love to paint. And I wasn't doing that because I was choosing to try to climb the corporate ladder. And do this. And I had individuals who were I permitted to some extent, I had guys who harassment, in the workplace, and it made me so frustrated. And instead of saying something about it, I didn't, I just let it, because that's the way it was. And I didn't always have the best advice from supervisors. I remember one telling me I should use that to my advantage. I remember another one telling me that we disagreed on how to manage people because I felt like you help your team out by focusing on their individual strengths. And this manager said, "Well, I think you should get someone who does well and make everybody chase after them." So I was in a job that I didn't love, doing something that wasn't playing on my strengths. I didn't know myself really well, and I was bending so far for someone else that I lost sense of myself.
Yeah.
And all of that adds to an unhealthy mind, unhealthy heart, and then your body. And I'm already battling a genetic condition where my collagen's, collagen is deteriorating. So it was a lot of I got to a breaking point and it was in my marriage. And I remember the day and I said, "This is not happening anymore. We are not going to hurt one another after knowing each other 15 years.
Yeah.
And I had to be the one to leave, and I left. Yeah. And it was hard.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you sharing your story, and it's important. Yeah. And I think when we first started our call, you talked about how you just wanted to be open. And
yeah, absolutely.
What do you think that the legal profession can do to sort of reduce the stigma around talking about our struggles and about the things that we're going through to make it more acceptable so that we can support each other?
Well, there has to be awareness first. People have to see and wake up that it's there. They can't do the denial thing. Secondly, there's education. And then thirdly, and maybe this is like a Venn diagram where they're all mixed together, those who have been before us have got to support us. And this is the same when an employer is implementing a wellness change. If there is not support at leadership, it is unlikely to be successful for the long term. So I see leadership when it comes to lawyer health starting at the law schools, starting by giving and recognizing that maybe every law school should have a counseling service within it. Maybe every law school should have a fitness or a nutritionist within that office and not just use the ancillary ones at the university where they are. Because it is a very unique set of pressures. And it's very similar to those of physicians, because I have a physician, it's one of the things I will recommend. She was an ER physician, and she talks about burnout and the pressures and the fact that we've got to have that support from management. So that is management, leadership, whatever it is. I think that is probably the first thing, along with awareness and then some education.
Yeah.
You got to know you're supported in the profession.
Well, and I think what you hit on too, with just like, you know, it coming from the people that came before us and good mentoring relationships and sponsoring younger lawyers. And also I think just, you know, changing the culture around some of this stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Did you find any good mentors in law school or since graduating that have helped or brought you up in any way?
Yes. Short answer, yes. I am thankful for, and upon hindsight, very thankful for my particular situation having been an older adult going back to school, because I could relate to my professors in a different way because I was teaching in another school across campus. And so we were able to talk about things and address just life a little bit. And I felt, I would say at the law school I went to, it was a very positive environment from most of my professors. I could just go there and talk to them about something. I also had in my full-time job, I had an attorney who, it was a great mentor and helped me to learn the ropes of that job, but also was about four decades older than me. So he's just like, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. And it's normal for there to be 15 different revisions on a contract. And it doesn't have to be totally perfect, but watch out for this. So I did have the benefit of having a good mentor.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Do you have any tips for like a young lawyer or a new lawyer, law student on how to find and develop those relationships?
You have to go outside of yourself and not be scared to fail. That means first, probably sitting down and with a journal, and I just got a new journal and I'm excited to do this on the plane next week traveling. Write down the things that you want, write down the things that you're scared about, and write down the things that you think you need right now, and then seek and find someone who you think can help you meet at least one of those. That's a place to start. But relationship building and networking requires us to take a step out of ourselves, and we're so afraid to fail in law school or be criticized, but the opportunity for growth exist parallel with that opportunity to fail.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to realize. So
it's a hard thing to realize that failure is really just a learning experience.
Yes. You know? Yes.
I try to emphasize that all of the time, that
every day
better having gone through what you went through, you know?
My sister said that to me 3 days after I got results for the bar and I missed it. And I was like, I love you. I do not want to hear that right now.
Yeah.
But you are right. She's like, Liv, you're going to be able to offer perspective to half the people who fail the bar, because in Indiana, the pass rate is about 50%.
Yeah.
And,
no, and it's not much better across the country nationwide. Yeah. So
yeah, absolutely.
So I wanted to swing back to something that you just mentioned briefly, but I had, when I was looking at your Live Balanced website, I noticed your painting. And so I wanted to ask you about your painting hobby and how that got started and how it brings you, what it brings to you.
Oh, thank you for asking. So first of all, thanks for going to the website. It is a work in progress, and I actually enjoy the creative part of it. The other part of me is like, it's gotta be perfect before I tell people about it. But again, it's a balance. So
done is better than perfect. You know, I'm kind of like flying by the seat of my pants on this podcast and my website. And it's like, I'm trying to send a message. I just need to get it out there. And nobody cares if it's not perfect.
I know. And that's my, what is it? My counselor, he's like, Olivia, pursue excellence, not perfection. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I will talk about the art, but in the candid and transparent, I realized the other day going through counseling and as far as the mental health, the cognitive behavioral therapy that is recommended for high levels of loneliness or pressure, I finally, through discussions and working on exercises, realized that I don't recall ever hearing from an adult figure in my life growing up that it was okay to fail. I actually never heard them say, it's okay not to be perfect. So I, now that I had that realization, I can say, I know where it came from. Let's try to pursue excellence and your heart will get through on what you want people to see.
Yeah.
So speaking of the heart, going back to painting, because that I love to paint. So it's a tactile type of exercise and it's so different from the mental energy spent writing agreements or evaluating regulatory requirements, that it's such a great balance again. But I, 3 years ago, again, my marriage was on threads. I had a ankle surgery for the fourth one scheduled in July. I had a knee surgery for the first time on the right knee in August. And then I had a knee surgery on the left one in September. And I wanted to get all of them done so that I could just heal at once. So I was sitting at home and I was like, I have always wanted to paint. I'm at home. I'm on crutches. I did. I went to the store. I got the paint and I painted my first painting, which sold about 2 months ago. It's in someone's home. It's lovely. And I realized I was so happy and it was such a good therapy because my mind is always going. So the activity of it is such a great catharsis. And I'm getting, it's one of those things, as scary as could be, putting my name on that canvas and then putting it up on a wall for everybody to critique. And then I realized it doesn't matter what they think. It matters because I did it and I'm getting that positive reinforcement. So I have some things going to try and have more exhibits in town, et cetera. But it was just, I've always been a textile, fashion conscious, color conscious. I used to sketch, I used to journal, and I stopped that for many years. And that day I got to that point. And so now it's like no stopping it now.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. I kind of felt the same way about photography. And that's like one of the reasons why I started
that.
Yeah. And then I've just started kind of like journaling more too. Mm-hmm. And I find it to be kind of like art therapy also. And I'm doodling and things like that in there. So that's really awesome.
Yeah. Journaling is one of those I've taken a break from and I'm getting back. I'm just about at that. You go through 5 stages and health behavior change. You pre-contemplation, contemplation, you prepare to do it, you take action, then you maintain it. That's the 5 stages of behavior change. Journaling was such a, I went back and read a journal right after my divorce. And I realized that I had the same unhealthy message that I wrote in my journal for years. And then I was mad at myself that I let it go. So then I stopped journaling. But now that I've gone through my own counseling and I'm creating and becoming who I really am, I'm getting ready to start journaling again. So I'm kind of excited about it, but kind of scary at the same time.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Let me ask you if you have any podcast, book, or other recommendations that would help a young attorney with wellness, balance, or stress management.
So I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, and frankly, my time is a little short. I have tons of books on the shelf I want to read, but I can say Dr. Susan Bialy-Haas, H-A-A-S. She's the ER physician I talked about, and she speaks publicly across the country, and her messages resonate well, and she and I have had discussions about the pressure, the similar pressures in law school and med school, because doctors rated number 2 on the loneliest of American workers, right behind lawyers. And so you can check out her page on Facebook, or she has a website where she will journal, blog, she speaks. I just really like her. And then there's a book I'm reading called When the Body Says No, The Stress and Disease Connection by Gabor Mate, M-A-T-E, and his first name is Gabor, G-A-B-O-R. That was recommended to me, and with my background in health and fitness, I've done this for 17 years, And yet I still learn things when I'm reading it, but I learn it because I feel it and I know what it's like. But that book is great because it helps you see the detriment of constant stress and not doing something about it and how that can affect your health and your mental output and your performance.
Yeah.
So those are two things off the cuff that I would definitely recommend for law students. But for law students, frankly, guys, just ask for help. And it doesn't mean you're not a good law student. It doesn't mean you're not going to be a good lawyer. They're not going to think badly of you. And if a firm or someone says that you're a bad person or you have to work and put yourself at risk, then maybe that's not a good, healthy environment and not where you need to be.
Yeah.
Because 100%. And at the end of the day, it's your life and you got one life to live. So you do what you need to do.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. And hopefully not everyone has to learn it the hard way. You know?
I know. Sometimes it's like, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. No, I definitely did. Do you have any other thoughts on wellness in the profession, what you think can be done to improve, or just any other things on your mind that we didn't talk about during this interview?
That's a great question. I do often have a lot of things on my mind. So I think it's important. If you are a law student or you are in a student body organization or you are a young lawyer, a young professional in the firm, and there is an opportunity for you to practice well-being exercises or your office says, hey, we're going to give you a wellness budget and you want to do something, do it. And like we had just talked about, even if you don't know exactly how to do it, start with something because with the loneliness, there was a stat here that I have that says the average person spends 80% of waking hours in the company of other people, and they prefer this to alone time. And the more time you spend alone, examples, being in the study room alone, not with study friends, in your office locked in there looking at stuff, the more time you spend alone, the larger effect of loneliness on mortality, and the lonelier you feel, the worst effect of being alone. So it's this negative cycle. And I think that if you just ask. Some of the best friendships I have are from the law student friendship, or my friendships in law school. And we talked about this kind of stuff. I have a core group of us and we get together and we just talk about the real about what it's like. And so I think that's probably the last thing I would want to say. Be active in the, there's some exciting stuff coming up with your, not only your state bars, but your ABA, having been a part of that lawyer well-being committee. I attended some planning in October. We've got some fun stuff and they're doing a lot of the work, but coming out in May for that first lawyer wellness week.
Cool.
So yeah, that's all I got to say.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thanks. I really enjoyed that you took the time to talk with me, to reach out, and I'm glad that we've made this connection. Yay. And that you shared your story here on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Olivia Ash. If you're curious, we actually connected over Instagram and couldn't wait to talk. If you want to connect with me, I'm at StressFreeJD. One thing I love about this podcast is the opportunity to meet new like-minded people. Thank you so much, Olivia, for your insight, and I can't wait to see you learn, grow, and lead in this profession. Thanks again for listening to the Stress-Free JD podcast, where I share tips and stories about how to thrive rather than just survive in the legal profession. Don't forget to let me know what you think and tell your friends who may enjoy the episode. I'm Amanda Bynum, and I'd love to connect with you. Email me at stressfreejd@gmail.com and find more at www.stressfreejd.com. Until next time, I hope you are figuring out how to be stress-free with your JD.